Okay. Okay, good morning. We're learning today Perek Zayin of the Nesivat Shuva. And I would just want to note as well that today is the fourth day of Sukkot, and we're sitting in the Sukkah. And the fourth day of Sukkot, in the Sukkah, the Ushpiz and the guest in the Sukkah is Moshe Rabbeinu. According to some traditions, it's Yosef HaTzadik. But according to the tradition which we usually follow, the guest is Moshe Rabbeinu. And it's perfect. It's perfect that the guest is Moshe Rabbeinu today for the subject that we're learning here today in the Nesiv HaTshuva. In the Nesiv HaTshuva here, he discusses two separate statements of Chazal, which are about Tshuva, and which are connected. He doesn't as much harp on the connection, harp on the similarity between the two of them, but the connection is inherent. Amar Rava, Rava said, Kol ha-mavir al midaysav, mavirin lay al-kol peshav. A person who is mavir al midaysav, a person who is forgiving, who overlooks his measures, right? We speak about the measures, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is yechbushu she yegrelu rachamecha al midai secha. When we speak about midais, is einay medaktek limdaid mida, right? That's the language of Rashi. To measure for measure, to be precise. Rachmim, mercy, is the opposite of measure. A measured response is sometimes we use that term to say that the person doesn't get angry, doesn't get upset. But measured means, this is, right, you gave me $3.25, that means you're entitled to half a pound exactly of turkey, right? That's a measured response. But if I'm inviting you for lunch, I just give you some turkey, you know? That's rachmim. Says the Gemara, a person who's mavir al midaysav, who forgets about measurements, and who's a forgiving person to others, mavir and le'al kol peshav. So Hashem forgives him for all of his sins. As it says, Naisei Avayin Ve'aver al Pesha, he bears sin and he passes over guilt. So Lemi Naisei Avayin, for who does Hashem bear sin? For to whom is Hashem forgiving? Lemi She'aver al Pesha, to one who himself overlooks the guilt of others. The Gemara then says a story that Rav Huna Ben Rav Yeshua got sick. Rav Papa went to visit him. He saw what bad shape he was in. He said, Avidulei Zavdasa, prepare for him his shrouds. In the end, he got better. So Rav Papa, it says, was a little bit embarrassed to come see him because he had already declared him dead. So he said to him, Amrulei, they said to him, my chazis. He says, like, well, what happened over there? So he says, yep, I died. Hachiava, I died. He says, however, what happened was, both. Both.
We're told to go by the men and get a shawl as far as putting on tefillin. Is there?
Then I cannot tell you. Then I cannot tell you. We have both mixed together. I don't wear tefillin. If that means something.
So you don't have any hakpada.
And then sometimes we have a chazan who wears tefillin. Our kaminig America is agudais agudais. So he says, yep, I died, or there was a gzeira that I was supposed to die. However, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm going to undo the decree, the measure. Why? Because he constantly overlooks his measures. In other words, he's not a person who's particular and says, this is what they deserve, this is what they're going to have to get. Because he's always overlooking these kinds of things, so I'm willing to overlook these things with him as well. And the Gemara then says, the final drasha on this topic, says the Gemara, Amar Rav Acha Rav Chanina, that the Micha said in his 13 attributes of mercy, Naisei Avayin Ve'aver Al Pesha, L'She'eris Nachalosai, Hashem bears the sins of She'eris Nachalosai, of the remnant of his portion. So he says, Aliyah V'kaitzva, it's delicious, but there's a thorn there. In other words, there's a condition. It's not absolute across the board. Lemi shemesim atzmai kishairis shirayim. When we say to the remnant of his portion, is for a person who makes himself like shirayim, like leftovers. In other words, a person who is humble, exceedingly humble and forgiving, that's the one who Hashem is going to be forgiving to. Now, what's the pshat? What's the meaning of this chazal? Now the Maral in the end says, it's likely that there's a simple pshat. And you know what the simple pshat is? It's a very ironic simple pshat. And that is, measure for measure. Right? And this whole issue, which is an issue about not measuring, not being precise, but being forgiving, there's a measure for measure in not measuring. Meaning that a person who himself is easygoing, so Hashem is going to be easygoing with him. Okay, again, it sounds funny, measure for measure for not being measured. However, it's a very simple thing. You know, I always say, like, we could picture in our mind, we're going to go to the Rabbeinu Shalom and Yom Kippur, right? And Erev Yom Kippur Mincha, we say, Hashem, Hashem, please forgive us, please forgive us, please forgive us, right? And then you come home, and the chveis, you know, your kittel's in the wrong place, and you get all upset. What's going on? Where's my kittel? You know, you're turning to Hashem, you're asking Hashem to be forgiving. You have to yourself incorporate forgiveness. Otherwise, there's a hypocrisy to asking for Hashem. Say, Hashem, why can't you overlook when we ourselves are not willing to overlook? So that's the idea of the mida keneged mida. That's the simple pshat. And when you say Misha Mesa Matzme Kishirayim, is if you make yourself easygoing, like sort of like leftovers, like you'll. So then Hashem says, for somebody who behaves that way, so I'm gonna do the same thing. I'm gonna act in the same way. But somebody who doesn't, somebody who's very particular, so then why could Hashem Baruch Hu do the same thing? That's a simple pshat. Maral Kedarkei Bakodesh takes this a significant step deeper. And Maral invokes here a notion that he has invoked many times in the Nesivat Shuva, which we haven't probably explained enough, but the way we understand it, it's really very much connected to the second of the Maral's three core principles of Tshuva that we've worked through the whole Nesivat Shuva according to. What he calls it here is called Midas HaPshitus, which is, again, it's a code word in the Maral. Maral uses it all the time. Pshitus means simplicity. Simplicity. And the notion of simplicity, as used here by the Maral, is a person who's not, again, erecting strong boundaries. Right? A gvul, when you get to a boundary, how do you delimit a boundary? You delimit a boundary by a fence. You have something which stands up, which sticks out, which says, stop here. Pshitus is like something which is straight and simple, without boundaries, without limits, a straight line. Right? If you keep going and going and going, I go from one person's end to the other end, you know, on a football field, so you make gvulim, you know, with chalk, you know, because if there would be fences, people would get hurt. Right? But the way normally of a boundaries is to make it not simple. Midas HaPshitus, the way the Maral expresses it, Rabbi Hartman brings beautifully what the Maral writes about this in the Nesiv HaAnava, right? That the thing is that what we speak about here with this Pshitus is Anava, is humility. Misha Meisim Atzmei Kishirayim. Person who makes himself like Shiraim, like nothing, that's humility. That's the characteristic of humility. And we know that humility is the ultimate midah. It's the ultimate character trait. Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Today's Ushpizin was the most profound prophet with the greatest connection to Hashem that ever was and that ever will be. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was onav ma'id mikol adam asher al pnei adama. Because he was the humblest of any person on the face of the earth. Humility goes with that. And the way the Maral explains it is that the same way Hashem is not having boundaries, Hashem is the Ein Sof, the infinite, Bli Gvul, without boundaries, so too there's such a thing as a person without boundaries, where a person becomes the Ein Sof, the person becomes unlimited. The more self-centered a person is, the more boundaries exist between the person and anybody else. A person who's focused on themselves, a person who sees who's looking towards honor and glory surrounding themselves, coming around them, that person has a clear sense of what bounds them, what limits them, what separates them from other people. An anav, a person who is humble, a person who practices anava, humility, what separates him from somebody else is not nearly so important. So in that sense, the person himself is a bligvul. The person's an ein saif, the person's unlimited, infinite, in the sense that he's not defined by boundaries, by different limitations. That's the pshitus that he looks for. When we speak about tshuva, we speak about a person being able to become more connected to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, connected to the rest of Klal Yisrael, where the person's sense of distinctiveness, of distinction, of separation, not distinctiveness in the positive sense of the word, of what specific power or strength do I have that I can use in a good way. I mean, distinction. It's me versus you. This is for myself. I have to worry about myself. That is the antithesis of connection of one person to another, and that's the antithesis of the person's ability to connect to Hashem and to relate to Hashem. Let's try to explain it a little bit more with a couple of more illustrations. Avram Avinu created the connection between the Jewish people and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Avram Avinu is also called an anav, a humble person. He chosid, he anav, mitalmidav shel Avram Avinu. Right, the Gemara says that Avram Avinu was not quite as humble as Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Because Avram Avinu said, "Va'anechi afor va'efer, I am dust and ash." Moshe Rabbeinu said, "V'nachnu ma." Right, Moshe and Aaron said, "We are. What are we? We're nothing. We're not even that." So Moshe Rabbeinu was even a greater anav, more humble than Avram Avinu. Baruch atu Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shehakol Nehiyah B'Dvarei. But Avraham Avinu was called an anav. And the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, very important Mishnah, when the Mishnah speaks about the attributes of Avraham Avinu, to which we say one who practices them is a Talmud, is like a disciple, a student of Avraham Avinu, so the Mishnah isolates three properties. One was that Avraham Avinu was ayin taiva, he was generous, he wanted to give to other people. The other one was nefesh shefela, which means he wasn't greedy. He didn't have these hefty appetites to be fed. And the third one is ruach nemucha, that he was humble. All of those things, they're three sides of one thing, which is that in Avraham Avinu's world, the focus wasn't himself. If the focus is himself, he wants to feed himself, he doesn't want to help others, he wants others to give him honor. Pshitus, simplicity, is what creates the biggest connection to Hashem. And Hashem's whole world is because He wants to be able to extend, to give more, not to have more revolve around Him, but to extend more beyond Him. And that's what creates, when we speak about the Maharal's second principle of tshuva, it's connecting to Hashem. This, the commonality of the simplicity of the person not being a physical thing, a physical being focused on himself, limited to within himself, that's what creates more possibility of connection to Hashem. And the second illustration, when we speak about humility, as the Ramchal writes about in the Mesillas Yesharim, the biggest element of humility is to recognize that what you have comes from God. People are usually arrogant about those things which are gifts. Chacham b'chachmasai, gibar b'gvurasai, asher b'ashrei. A wise man is proud of his brains. A strong man is proud of his strength. A wealthy man is proud of his wealth. But all of those things, we say, those are gifts from Hashem. Right? When a person is conceived, the Gemara says, Hashem declares, this one's going to be wise, this one's going to be strong, this one's going to be wealthy. There's only one area where we could potentially say that it's ours, like Shlomo HaMelech said in Kehelet yesterday, Eselekim Yirah, Hakol Bidei Shamayim, Chutz Miyirah Shamayim. Everything comes from Hashem except for fear of heaven. That's what a human being has to accomplish. to create within themselves Yirat Shamayim, fear of heaven. The Anav, says the Ramchal Nemesilas Yesharim, is the person who recognizes that what he has comes from Hashem, and therefore he doesn't take credit for what he's been given as a gift. The greatest Anava, the greatest humility, has the greatest recognition of what the person got from Hashem. Says the Ramchal, says the Maral here, that the person who is, you know, the Pshitus is dependent on that. When a person is not seeing that what they have as a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then the person separated from Hashem. They see themselves as an independent, freestanding entity. The greatest connection a person forges with Hashem is realizing how dependent they are on Hashem. Right? And I'm sure you may recall the muscle, which I always like to give to this. I have a business partner. We created a business together. I like him. I work with him. I have a connection with him. One day he decides, or I decide, we want to dissolve the partnership. Fine, no problem. I'll take out what I put in, he'll take out what he put in, right? We'll share our profits, we'll go our ways. We liked being together, but we don't have to be together. Now, on the other hand, I created a business, I went to the bank and I borrowed $250,000. I can't decide one day I don't like the bank. I still owe them $250,000. As strong as my connection is to my business partner, it's not that strong, because it can be broken. But a connection of dependence can never be broken. And when we realize now by the bank, you'll say, okay, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to the other bank. I'm going to borrow $300,000. I'll use $250,000 to pay back the first one. But this is like the Federal Reserve, okay? The Rabbeinu Shel Olam is the last bank, is the only bank. It's the only way to go. So the deepest connection a person has with Hashem is not that they are able to express themselves nicely in prayer and feel this attachment and ecstatic involvement in their service of Hashem. The greatest connection is to realize that we are only here because of Hashem, that we are constantly dependent on Hashem in every moment. That's the deepest connection a person would have with Hashem. That's the connection called anava. That's the connection called humility. That's the connection called humility. And that, says the Maharal, is why that person who makes himself like Shiraim is going to be so attached to Hashem. The more we separate ourselves from Hashem, the more complex we make it. I'm my own thing, you're your own thing. But when there's real humility, then we're all attached to Hashem, life becomes very simple. The Maral just explains, you know, plugs in a couple of things. He says, and that's the idea. That's why cleanliness from sin, forgiveness, is always associated with the color white. White is the simplest of colors. It's blank, it's plain. And chet, sin, is red. It's the deepest of colors, because that's the most complex, the most rich and distracting. You know, white is simple, it's plain, it's the beginning. Okay. So that's what he explains, the simplicity of the person who makes himself like Shirayim. That's the way he explains the person who's Mavir al Midaisav. Person who is particular about what's coming to him has strong boundaries. Right? You can't step over here. Person who's Mavir al Midaisav doesn't have boundaries. He's an Ein Seif like the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. He's a Bli Gvul like the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Right? Chazal famously say this is why Hashem gave the Jewish people the Torah in the desert. He gave them the Torah in Eretz Yisrael. So what happens in Eretz Yisrael? What's the first thing we learn about Eretz Yisrael in the Torah? First thing we learn about Eretz Yisrael, I'm talking about practical Eretz Yisrael, is, okay, these are the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. And when we get into Sefer Yeshua, we say, you have here, you have there, you have there. Everybody has their portion in Eretz Yisrael. In the Midbar, right, you go in Baltimore, this is my property line, this is your property line. In the desert, there are no boundaries. Nobody stakes a claim to this chunk of desert or that chunk of desert. That's why that's the place to accept the Torah. One could say that's the idea why Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim. Yerushalayim, according to the main opinion in the Gemara, it's a machlokes, But according to the main opinion of the Gemara, Yerushalayim wasn't given as any tribe's portion. Yerushalayim was Hefker. It was everybody's portion. It was internationalized. Actually, it was intertribalized, right, amongst the Bnei Yisrael. So nobody will say, this is my place. Because the place where Hashem comes to rest, everybody realizes that mine, mine, we get it from Hashem. That's the first notion which the Maral teaches us here. Again, Ein l'cha limud yoter matim. There's no more suitable limud teaching for the guest, for the Ushpizin of Moshe Rabbeinu. The second part of this perek, of this chapter of the Nesiv HaTshuva, deals with fasting. Fasting is necessarily wrapped up with tshuva. The ultimate day of tshuva and of forgiveness is Yom Kippur. Even the Aseres Yimei Tshuva, the practice of pious people was to fast during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva. In fact, the reason, according to many, why we start saying Slichas a minimum of 4 days before Rosh Hashanah is because the Aseres Yimei Tshuva, there are 4 days that you can't fast, because there's 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, you're not supposed to fast, there's Shabbos, and there's Erev Yom Kippur, you can't fast, you're not allowed to fast. So in order to make it that you can have 10 days of penitence, 10 days of fasting, so we have extra days of slichas, and people fast during those days of slichas. Most people, you and I know, don't fast, but that's the minhag of anshim of the especially pious. There's still plenty of people who do it; they don't hang around here. So,
right? You had Gedalias.
Same Gedalia is one of the fast days. Yeah, sure. That everybody does in the Aseres Yimei Tshuva, but there people do it for 10. So, what's the connection of Tanis to Tshuva? What's the purpose of Tanis? What's the purpose of fasting? And here, right, the Maral goes through. He brings a Chazal which speaks about different aspects of Kol Hayesha B'Tanis. But his main thing, what he presents, and this is unusual. I just point out, it's unusual in the Maral. The way the Maral Seder usually is in the Nesiv HaSlelem especially is, first he quotes a Chazal, he quotes a statement from the Medrash or from the Gemara, and then he analyzes it and establishes the principle. Here the Maral works the opposite way. Here he first speaks about Tanis, the significance of a fast, and then he says, and that's why we fast during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva, and then he brings a Chazal and he analyzes the Chazal. What's the site of the fasting according to the Ramcha? The Maral is because he says fasting is not torture. Fasting is not to pain yourself. It's not that it should be a kapara. He says, okay, the truth is there's an aspect of that too. Everybody knows there's an aspect of that that we recognize as well. But he says, but that's not the main idea of the Tanis for Tshuva. The main idea for the Tanis for Tshuva is to make yourself sacred, kodesh. And the way you make yourself sacred is by detaching from the mundane. Detaching yourself from the mundane, that's called kodesh. That's where the Tanis is called kedusha. Right? So he says, Hatanis ba'atzmei u'kedusha adam li'ais b'le'achilu shtia k'maya el'yainim. In this sense, he's simulating Hashem who doesn't eat or drink, the angels who don't eat or drink. Let's go back to our guest today, Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe Rabbeinu got the Torah at Har Sinai, what did he not do for 40 days and 40 nights, three times over? He didn't eat bread. He didn't drink water. Right? He didn't sleep. He was niskadesh kemalach. And that's what enabled him to connect to Hashem, because he was mamish culturally akin to Hashem. What mattered to him was not the material things. He wasn't engaged in the material things. He was engaged only in the spiritual. That's the power of Tanis. That's the power of a fast day. That's Yom Kippur. Yeah, there's an aspect of Yom Kippur of, okay, there's a little struggle, a little suffering, right? We say, some people say in the tefillah before Yom Kippur, like people say in the prayer when they fast, I've given up a little bit of my fat. It should be like the fat of an offering that's offered on the Mizbeach. My blood level is down because I'm dehydrated. It should be like I sprinkled that blood on the Mizbeach, like a carbon. Right? There's an aspect of that. There's also an aspect in Sukkos right? People say the tefillah before going into the sukkah, that we exile ourselves from our house. And just like a person goes into exile, it's a kapara, so we go into the sukkah, kilu hirchakti nidayid, as if I've gone and I've wandered and I've left. But we understand something else. When we go in the sukkah, what are we doing? We're detaching ourselves from the connection to physical possessions, which you know, is so defining. We want to redefine ourselves on something of a more lofty plane, of living in the clouds, in the Anane HaKavod. Says, that's Tanis. So Yom Kippur, you could feel the pain, so to speak, of the Tanis of Yom Kippur, but the bigger thing is to have the levitating of Yom Kippur. You know, where you... I don't need to eat or drink right now. I'm like, I'm above it. It's like not... Yinitzim es nafshei seicham is that the greatest pleasure is being here and being able to do this differently. That's... Maral says that's the notion of Tanis. That's the notion of fasting. Again, Ein Lecha Limud Yoter Matim, there's no greater connection than Moshe Rabbeinu, right, who is characterized by this humility, but then to forge the connection with Hashem. He did this. The Gemara says, according to one opinion of the Gemara, Moshe Rabbeinu had to wait 7 days from when Hashem came to, you know, when he went up originally for the Ten Commandments, till he went up to Har Sinai. Why? Because the mamish had to flush out of his system the food that he had eaten before. He had to be purified. Detachment from the physical creates kedusha. You know, I always like to repeat this. Rabbeinu Yaina brings from the Ramban. Rabbeinu Yaina brings from the Ramban. Okay, so look in the shul. I wasn't sure which one was yours. Look at the shul's esrog by the Bima, and look at the one in the ladies section. One of those is yours. Okay? I there were three Estragim on my table. Yours and those two. So I thought I gave you the one which was yours, but I wasn't sure. So look at the other two, and whichever one to switch it with. Sure, you can use it and switch it later if you want. Sure. Okay. You can use mine also if you want. If you want. Okay? But use the one I gave you better. Okay? What did I start to say?
Talking about Moshe Rabbeinu,
who came for 7 days.
7 days.
That I finished saying.
Yeah.
What did I start saying?
You started talking about the
Esrog. Oh, yes. Rabbeinu Yena. So it says that the Hasidim Arishainim, the pious people, were Shaya Shachas and Mespalu. They would wait an hour, they would prepare for an hour before they davened. What did they do during that hour that they prepared before they daven? Right, so the Gemara, the Mishnah says, "Kdei shichavnu libo mamokam," they could direct their hearts to Hashem. So the Rabbeinu Yonah says, some say the idea was that that's the way they'd be able to concentrate on what they were saying. Get rid of the distractions, they can concentrate on what they're saying. So then it should say they could, "Kdei shichavnu libo litfilosam," they could concentrate on their prayers. It says they should be able to direct themselves to Hashem. Says Rabbeinu Yair brings from the Ramban, and evidently Ramban held this so strongly that if you look at the letter of the Ramban, Igeres Ramban, that he wrote to his child, he says this in a line, in a half line. He wrote a letter, one page letter to his child. It's a fantastic letter. In there he has one line where he says this notion which he learns pshat in this Mishnah. He says that in order to be able to address Hashem, they had to separate themselves from the worldly concerns which preoccupied them till they walked into shul. They couldn't approach Hashem in the same, you know, here they were, before they were doing this, they were cooking this, they were taking care of that. They had to connect to Hashem. So you'll excuse me, I think I repeated this recently, you were someplace where you were, but I always like to use this mashal. Someone from the shul once called me up, said, "This is Rabbi Hauer." He says, "You're not going to believe what happened to me this week." I said, "What happened?" He said, I was traveling to Chveis, to whichever city, for a wedding. I said, "Very fantastic." I said, I'm at the gate at the airport. And who comes to my gate? The Rosh Shiva, Rabbi Feldman, comes to the gate. I go over to him. I say, "Shalom Aleichem." He was so warm to me, so nice to me. It was wonderful. I said, "Great, that's fantastic." He says, "Not over yet." He says, then I get on the plane. I go to my seat. Who's sitting next to me? The Rosh Yeshiva of Aaron Feldman. Gevaldik. Great. He says, there's only one problem. He says, you know what I brought for the flight? I brought a novel to read on the flight. So I was a little embarrassed. He says, you know, if I would have known that I was going to be traveling next to Aaron Feldman, I would have spent 2 days before, I would have written down all my questions. Everything was, you know, any question of hashkof, of Jewish thought which I had, any problem I had in a story in the Chumash, anything I had in a Gemara, I would have, like, prepared all these questions so I would have had what to talk to him about. Instead, you know, like, I sort of, like, sat there with him, and, you know, he made small talk with me. It was very nice. And I had nothing to say. And the idea was that this person was living in whatever world he was living. And here he was now with somebody who he knew occupied a different world. You can't just snap your fingers and be able to... Of course, he's a nice man. He'll talk to you about, oh, where do you live? How many children do you have? And where do they go to school? And how's your work? And what do you do for a living? He's very nice. He'll talk to you about whatever you want. But is that what you want to talk to him about? You know, if Lahavdil, you know, if you were flying and somebody says, could you do me a favor? I want you to accompany Albert Einstein to this place. Right? So you're going to go and you just say, wow, what a privilege. I'm going to accompany Albert Einstein. And you're going to go and then, like, you don't remember your 11th grade physics. Right? And like, look, what are you going to do? So you'll make small talk and you'll be able to, you know, say, could you guys take a picture of us, you know, and be finished? So he'll be a nice guy, he'll do it. What are you going to really do? For 3 weeks before, if you have the time, you're going to take out every book of physics, you're going to go on the internet, you're going to try to learn. So when you're there, you'll be able to talk a little bit about physics to Albert Einstein. You go to daven to the Rabbi Nishalayim. The Rabbi Nishalayim is very nice. You can talk to him about the fact that your toe hurts this morning, about the fact that you have a shtickle stomach ache. You can talk to him about the fact that you could use a little more money, you could use another job. But tell me something, where the Rabbi Nishalayim lives, are there toes? Are there stomach aches? Are there jobs? Is there money? Where the Rabbi Nishalayim lives, there's something completely different. And you can get it. If you want to talk to the Rabbi Nishalayim, so you're going to spend some time before switching out of the stuff, which Rabbi Shalom would be fine to hear about. Rabbi Shalom comes down to listen to whatever we want to talk to him about. But why should we make him come down to where we are when we could go up to where he is? That's what the Hasidim Rishonim used to do. Says the Maharal, that's the idea. Why we fast as tshuva. Again, it's principle two of the Maharal, which is tshuva requires coming close to Hashem. And to come close to Hashem, you got to somehow adopt his culture. And his culture is metaphysical. It's spiritual. It's not material and mundane. That's his second principle. Maral goes on to bring, I said, he brings a Chazal. So the Chazal, the famous Gemara in Tainus, where there's really a debate about the Nazir, who separates partially from this world. The one opinion calls him a Chayte, a sinner, because he deprived himself of something in this world. And the other one called him a Kaddish, because the Pasuk says, Kaddish Yeh, he's holy. And the Gemara goes back and forth. The one who calls him a sinner, but he's called a Kaddish. So our Gemara says it's referring to his hair. Right? The Girsa, the text which the Maral had, which the Inyakov has, is that, oh, for him, if it's no problem, if it doesn't bother him, that's fine. And that's a distinction which, in any case, even in our Gemara, the Gemara makes, which is that if you fast and the fasting makes it that you can't do things, so then that's called a chayte. When we don't practice this precious completely. And the idea is that we understand, as the Rambam wrote, that a person who's not feeling good, functioning well, happy, is going to have a hard time being able to concentrate on anything. There's some times where you pull back from something and it allows you to focus more clearly. So it's true. If a person overeats, right, or overindulges, is too focused on indulgence, in a certain sense they'll be very happy, but there'll be no emotional or mental space left for being able to think about the Rabbeinu Shalom. Our trick is to find the perfect situation where we don't feel bad, but we're not enmeshed in physicality. Very tricky. Very, very, very tricky. So this is the balance, back and forth. There's such a thing as being holy, being able to be detached from the physical, and there's such a thing as being a chayte, where the physical is suffering. And there, the person is not in such a good shape. And the Maharal goes on to speak about this more, from more angles. But this is really his core principle that he speaks about with this idea of the idea. And he says that's the idea of the Gemara, where the Gemara says a person should see himself. The Gemara says a person should view himself as if there's a holiness in his stomach. What does that mean? So the Maharal teaches it is that when you feed yourself, don't feed yourself as saying, sinner, indulgent. Don't see it as taiva. See it as a necessary part, even for the holiness that a person has to achieve. That's the expression of this balance, where you're satisfying your needs but not indulging your wants. That's the idea. And I just want to conclude with the last thing that the Maharal writes about here in this perek, which is that we find a notion of tainus, that the Gemara says that kol tainus she'ein bo mipesha Yisrael, a tainus which doesn't have sinners of the Jewish people involved in the tainus, is not a good tainus. It's not a good fast. So the Maharal says, what's the idea behind this? What's the idea behind this? So I didn't finish the Chazal. The Gemara says, I'll prove it to you, because the Ketores, the incense in the Beis Hamikdash, had 11 samimonim, 11 different herbs, right? And one of them was the chelbina. Chelbina is galbanum, is like sulfur. It's a very bad smelling spice. But yet it has to be included in the Ketores. So what does this all mean? So the Maharal says a couple of pieces here to this very, very important yesod. He says, first of all, he says, reach. Why do we use the mashal of reach, of smell, of ketores? Excuse me. He says because reach, the ketores, is there to contrast with the midas hadin, with the midah of judgment. And he brings this the notion that says Yasimu Ketera be Apecha, and we find the Gemara speaks about the idea of the Heirichai, right? That the Gemara says Moirach Vidoy, and a person was able to judge by the sense of smell. What's the idea? So he says like this. I'm not going to explain all the aspects of it, but he says like this, that a din, judgment is restraint. Judgment says this is the way this has to be, this is the way that has to be, and it holds back. It holds back people from riding roughshod one over the other. Din is restraint. We associate Yitzchak Avinu with din, with judgment, and with gvura, with self-control. He says that when you have a tainus, a fast day is to address midas hadin, is to address judgment. Why? Because that's what a tainus does. And a tainus, you are restraining yourself. You are being miskaber. You're holding yourself back from something that you might want. So he says, that's why we compare it to the ketores. And he says, the paishim, the sinners, are the people who sinned, who are now miskaber al yitzram, who are now joining the fast day, which means that they are overcoming their drives. They're controlling their drives. They're now choosing to limit themselves, right, beyond that which they were and they were doing before. That's all this picture of the tainus And that's why you want to, you don't want to have just tzaddikim, gemurim, just the righteous people who don't exhibit gevura. If you have a fast of people who for them this is easy, then it's not significant. The whole power of the tainus, in a certain sense, and here he's almost taking the other side, is the gevura in the tainus, the self-control which the person has to exercise in the tainus. And he says that comes out, that's associated with reach. Maybe sometime we'll explain it a little bit more clearly. But he says, and he says, of course, tainus comes from the term me'anta, right? Again, it's also a term the term leonois, to humble yourself. And that's also always, again, like we discussed before, connection to Hashem. But he says this idea also is, again, going back to the pshitus. The idea is that tainus has to have a tzibur, has to include everybody. A filu paisha Yisrael, not just like-minded people, has to include everybody. Because as we said before, the thing which makes the person connected to Hashem is when the person has no boundaries. Hashem has no boundaries. The tainus is supposed to be where the community comes together. Right? The tainus in the fast days of the tainus, they would go out into the street, into Rach Bashalir, so everyone would come together. Because again, it's that. We say on Yom Kippur that because we're fasting, shalom mituvach beinenu, we're able to get along better with each other when we're fasting. Because we're not hung up on mine, yours, you know, there's no pushing for the kiddush, right, on Yom Kippur. You know, it's the humility creates the togetherness. And that's why a big part of tainus is bringing everybody together, all people together, different kinds of people together, so that ba'aguda achas, with one group, we're able to be that much more attached, that much more close to Hashem. Okay. That's the essence of the prayer. Okay.
What's called?